A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been rewatching An Idiot Abroad, and it got him thinking. He says he relates to Carl Pilkington on a deep level. That attachment to daily routine, the secret love of getting pushed out of it, and the painful process of getting from A to B. And he's asking two things. First, was Carl actually putting on an act, or is that really him? And second, for people who love that specific genre, travelogue meets bewildered, reluctant host, what else is worth watching? It's a good one, because that show genuinely cracks something open.
And the weird thing is, nobody's really replicated it successfully. 15 years later, An Idiot Abroad still feels like a one-off. Which is strange, right? Usually when something hits, you get a wave of imitators within 18 months.
The industry's natural response to anything successful. Cover the covers.
But the Carl Pilkington thing resisted cover covering. And I think the authenticity question is actually central to why. If he's faking it, the magic evaporates. If he's real, it's one of the most remarkable accidental casting decisions in television history.
Let's start there. What do we actually know about whether Carl was performing?
Okay, so I went down a proper rabbit hole on this. The short answer is that the consensus among people who've worked with him, including Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, the producers, the crew, is that Carl is fundamentally genuine, but with an important caveat. He's not stupid, and he knows what makes good television.
He's not performing a character. He's performing himself.
That's exactly the distinction. Ricky Gervais has said this in multiple interviews over the years. He and Merchant discovered Carl when he was a producer on their radio show on XFM in London. This is late 90s, early 2000s. Carl wasn't hired to be on air. He was literally just the guy operating the equipment. But they started talking to him between segments, and the things that came out of his mouth were so odd and original that they just kept the mic on.
The accidental genius pipeline.
And Gervais has been very consistent about this. He said, quote, Carl is not a character. He's not putting it on. What you see is what you get. He thinks these things. Stephen Merchant has backed that up repeatedly. They both say Carl doesn't have the acting ability to sustain a character for that long.
That's actually a strong argument. Sustaining a consistent fake persona across multiple seasons, podcasts, books, that's harder than just being yourself.
Carl's books are another data point. He's written several. The Moaning of Life, Happy Slapped by a Jellyfish, and Idiot Abroad, the book. The voice in those is identical to the voice on screen. Same cadence, same worldview, same peculiar logic. You don't ghostwrite that level of consistency.
Unless you're a very committed ghostwriter.
Sure, but here's the thing. Carl's wife Suzanne has given interviews where she basically says, yeah, that's him. That's what it's like living with him. The round head, the constant observations about things being a bit weird, the resistance to anything outside routine.
The round head is a key detail.
But there's a nuance here that I think most people miss. Carl knows he's funny. He's not unaware. He's been doing this for 2 decades now, and he understands his own comedic rhythm. So what you're seeing in An Idiot Abroad isn't a scripted performance, but it is a slightly heightened version of himself. He's not faking reactions, but he knows which reactions the cameras are looking for.
It's like the quantum observer effect of reality television. The act of filming changes the behavior, but the underlying particle is still real.
That's a surprisingly good analogy. And there's actually a telling moment from the production itself. The director of An Idiot Abroad, Luke Campbell, said in a behind-the-scenes interview that they never gave Carl a script. They gave him situations. They'd say, you're going to do this thing, here's where you're sleeping, good luck. His reactions were genuine. But they absolutely structured the situations to provoke those reactions.
The authenticity is in the response, not the setup.
And that's the magic formula that nobody's quite cracked since. It's not enough to find someone grumpy. It's not enough to drop them in uncomfortable situations. The specific alchemy of Carl is that he's curious despite himself. He complains endlessly, but he also notices things that a professional travel host would never notice. He'll be in the shadow of the Great Wall of China, and his observation is, it's a bit of a letdown, isn't it? It's just a wall.
Which is actually a more honest reaction than most travel shows would ever permit.
And that's the thing Daniel put his finger on in the prompt. The catharsis element. Carl starts every episode resistant, annoyed, wishing he was home with a cup of tea and a biscuit. But by the end, almost every time, something cracks through. He has a moment of genuine wonder. And because it's been earned through 40 minutes of grumbling, it hits harder than any polished travelogue.
The grumbling is the seasoning.
It's the whole dish. And I think this is where we can broaden out to the second part of the prompt. What else fits in this genre? Because what we're really talking about here is a very specific format. It's not just comedy travel. It's not just reluctant host. It's the intersection of genuine documentary value with a protagonist who actively resists the premise.
Let's build the taxonomy. What are the essential ingredients?
I'd say there are four. One, the host has to be out of their element, not pretending, not playing a character. Two, the locations or situations have to be interesting on their own terms. The show works because you actually do want to see the Great Wall and the Taj Mahal and the Jordanian desert. 3. The host resistance has to come from a real place. It can't feel performative. And 4. There has to be some kind of arc, some kind of earned moment, where the resistance gives way to something else.
Even if that something else is just exhausted acceptance.
Exhausted acceptance is a perfectly valid narrative endpoint.
What shows actually hit these marks?
The closest spiritual successor I've found is a show called The Misadventures of Ramesh Ranganathan. BBC production, started in 2018, ran for a few series. Ramesh is a British comedian of Sri Lankan descent, and the premise is that he travels to places most people wouldn't choose for a holiday. Haiti, Ethiopia, Bosnia, the Arctic. He's not playing a character, but he's out of his comfort zone, and he's honest about being nervous or awkward or uncomfortable.
How does it compare structurally?
It's more earnest than An Idiot Abroad. Ramesh isn't moaning constantly. He's more of an anxious observer. But the DNA is similar. You're seeing real places through the eyes of someone who isn't a professional travel presenter, and the humor comes from the gap between expectation and reality. He goes to Albania expecting post-communist grimness and discovers this beautiful Mediterranean coastline and incredibly warm people. The arc is real.
The production isn't trying to smooth out his edges.
They let him be awkward. There's a great moment in the Haiti episode where he's trying to learn drumming from a local group and he's terrible, and he knows it, and the locals are laughing at him, and he's laughing at himself. That's the Carl Pilkington energy, the willingness to be the butt of the joke without winking at the camera. There's a lesser-known Australian series called Travels with My Father, which is Jack Whitehall and his dad Michael. Jack's a comedian, Michael's a very proper, slightly posh former talent agent in his 70s. They travel together through Southeast Asia, Eastern Europe, the American West. The dynamic is different because it's father-son, but the travelogue element is genuine, and Michael Whitehall is essentially a more refined Carl Pilkington. He's constantly unimpressed, constantly wishing he was somewhere more civilized, and then occasionally blindsided by genuine beauty.
Is it actually good, or is it just adjacent?
It's good in its lane. The first couple of series are stronger. It gets a bit self-aware later on. Which is the curse of this genre, honestly. Once the host knows they're the product, the authenticity erodes.
That's the fundamental tension. Success kills the thing it's successful at.
You can see it happening in real time with some of these. But there's another show that I think deserves mention, which is Dark Tourist on Netflix. New Zealand journalist David Ferrier. The premise is he visits dark tourism sites, nuclear disaster zones, haunted forests, assassination locations. Ferrier is curious and uncomfortable, and he doesn't pretend otherwise. The show got mixed reviews because some critics found him too naive, but I think that's the wrong read. The naivety is the point. He's not an expert. He's a guy discovering things.
The naivety is a feature, not a bug.
In this genre, absolutely. The moment you send an expert, you've made a different show. The whole value proposition is watching someone process something in real time. And Ferrier is interesting because he's not grumpy, he's anxious, slightly neurotic, but game. He'll go anywhere, and his discomfort is palpable but not performative.
I want to push on something. All the examples you've given are still broadly within travel. The prompt asked about documentary and beyond. Where does this genre bleed into other spaces?
I think the reluctant host format has actually migrated more into food and culture documentary than pure travel. There's a show called Somebody Feed Phil on Netflix. Phil Rosenthal, who created Everybody Loves Raymond. He travels around eating. He's not reluctant in the Carl Pilkington sense, but he's definitely not a food expert. He's just a guy who loves eating and is slightly bewildered by everything else. The charm is that he seems like someone's dad who wandered onto a food show set.
The dad at a buffet energy.
That energy works. But the darker, more Pilkington-esque version would be something like The Trip with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. It's a fictionalized version of themselves. They play exaggerated versions of Coogan and Brydon, traveling through the north of England, then Italy, then Spain, eating at fancy restaurants and doing impressions at each other. It's scripted, so it's a different beast, but it captures that same tension between the grandeur of the setting and the pettiness of the humans in it.
The Michael Caine impression as travelogue.
I mean, that's literally multiple episodes. But here's the thing. The Trip works because the restaurants are real, the landscapes are real, the food is real. The documentary element is genuine even though the conversations are structured. It's a hybrid form that I think An Idiot Abroad actually helped legitimize.
What about outside the UK comedy ecosystem? Because all of these are very British or Commonwealth.
That's not a coincidence. There's something culturally specific about the reluctant traveler as a comic archetype. The British have a long tradition of the grumpy observer abroad. It goes back to Victorian travel writing, honestly. The colonial administrator who'd rather be in Surrey. The whole genre of comic misadventure in foreign parts is practically a national literary tradition.
It's the Empire coming home to roost as a comedy format.
In a way. But there are American examples. Parts Unknown with Anthony Bourdain is the obvious one, though Bourdain was the opposite of reluctant. He was aggressively enthusiastic, just in a world-weary way. The connection is authenticity, not reluctance. He refused to do the standard travel host thing. He'd go places and eat what people actually ate and talk about politics and history and colonialism. He was the expert who refused to act like one.
Bourdain is what happens when the reluctant host graduates to full engagement.
He's the after photo. Carl Pilkington is the before, and I think there's room for both. But Bourdain spawned a whole generation of imitators who missed the point. They copied the cynicism without the curiosity, the edge without the warmth.
The glockenspiel of edgy travel hosting.
And that brings me to something I think is under-discussed about this genre. The best shows in this space are not mean, they don't punch down. Carl Pilkington never mocks the people he visits. He mocks himself, he mocks the situation, he mocks Ricky Gervais for sending him there. But he's never cruel to locals. He's actually quite respectful in his own odd way.
Because the joke is always on him.
That's the crucial ethical line. When the host is the butt of the joke, you can go anywhere and do anything. The moment you start mocking the place or the people, you've made a colonial travelogue. An Idiot Abroad never crosses that line. Carl in India isn't mocking India. He's overwhelmed by India. He's confused by India. He's hiding in his hotel room from India. But the comedy is in his reaction, not in the place itself.
That's actually a useful filter for recommendations. Does the host punch up, down, or inward?
Inward is the sweet spot. Ramesh Ranganathan does this well too. When he's in Ethiopia, the comedy comes from his own awkwardness and preconceptions being dismantled, not from mocking Ethiopian culture. The travelogue element is treated with genuine respect.
What about beyond travel? You mentioned food. What about history, science, nature?
There's a show called The Reluctant Traveler with Eugene Levy that Apple TV Plus did. Eugene Levy, the guy from Schitt's Creek, the eyebrows. He's in his 70s, he doesn't like travel, he doesn't like adventure, he likes his routines and his comfort. So the premise is sending him to places like Finland and Costa Rica and Venice. It's explicitly modeled on the An Idiot Abroad template.
Does it work?
It's pleasant. It's not as sharp. Eugene Levy is a professional actor and comedian. He knows how to play the reluctant card, but it feels more performed than Carl. The show is beautifully shot. The locations are stunning, and Levy is charming, but it lacks the genuine unpredictability. You never feel like he might actually refuse to leave the hotel.
Which Carl absolutely would.
There's a famous moment in the China episode where he just refuses to get out of the car, and you believe it. With Eugene Levy, you know he's going to do the thing eventually because he's a professional and there's a production schedule.
The authenticity question circles back. The value of the genre is directly proportional to how much you believe the host's reluctance is real.
I think that's exactly right. And it's why the genre is so hard to replicate. You can't cast for this. You have to find someone who doesn't want to be there, but is also compelling enough to watch for hours. Those people don't generally audition for television shows.
The accidental protagonist.
Carl Pilkington is basically the platonic ideal of the accidental protagonist. He was a radio producer. He had no ambitions to be on camera. He's not conventionally attractive, not charismatic in any traditional sense, doesn't have a broadcaster's voice. He's just a guy from Manchester with a round head and a lot of opinions about how things are a bit much.
The everyman who's slightly less every than most men.
That's the thing Daniel mentioned about relating to him. Carl represents something most travel media never acknowledges, the fact that travel is often uncomfortable, disorienting, and exhausting. The professional travel host is paid to be delighted by everything. Carl is paid to be honest about being miserable, and that honesty creates a weird kind of permission for the audience. You're allowed to not love every moment of your trip. You're allowed to miss your own bed.
The anti-Instagram travel philosophy.
And in an era where travel has become this highly performative social media exercise, the Carl Pilkington approach feels almost radical. Here's a guy visiting the wonders of the world, and his primary emotion is mild inconvenience.
Which is closer to most people's actual travel experience than they'd admit.
Nobody posts a photo of them being tired and grumpy at Machu Picchu. But that's the real experience. The altitude sickness, the early morning, the crowds, the moment of wondering if it was worth it. Carl lives in that space.
If someone's worked through An Idiot Abroad and wants the next hit, where do you send them?
I'd tier it. First tier, the closest match, The Misadventures of Ramesh Ranganathan. It's the most direct spiritual successor, and Ramesh has enough of his own voice that it doesn't feel like a knockoff. Second tier, strong overlap, Travels with My Father, especially the early seasons, and Dark Tourist if you want something edgier. Third tier, adjacent but rewarding. Somebody Feed Phil for the unpolished enthusiasm, the trip for the scripted version of the dynamic, and the reluctant traveler. If you just want more reluctant travel content and don't mind it being slightly more polished.
What about outside the English language sphere?
That's harder. The reluctant host format is very Anglo-American in its sensibilities. I'm sure there are equivalents in other languages, but they don't tend to travel well because the humor is so culturally specific. The grumpy British traveler is an export that works because the British Empire created a shared cultural vocabulary around travel and discomfort.
The stiff upper lip is global brand.
The Japanese have their own version of this in some variety shows, sending comedians to weird places, but the tone is completely different, more manic, more game show energy. The Korean travel variety shows are huge, but again, different register. The specific Carl Pilkington note of low-energy bewilderment is hard to find outside the British Isles.
What about podcasts? The prompt didn't specify video.
There's a podcast called The Travel Diaries that's not comedy, but it's structured around interviews with people about the trips that shaped them. The host, Holly Rubinstein, gets guests to talk about their formative travel experiences. It's not reluctant host territory, but it scratches a similar itch of honest travel reflection rather than curated highlights.
Any fiction that captures this.
The Accidental Tourist by Anne Tyler, the novel, and the film with William Hurt. It's about a travel writer who hates travel. He writes guidebooks for people who don't want to leave their comfort zone. He's the ultimate reluctant traveler, and the book is essentially about what happens when circumstances force him out of his routines. It's fiction, but it's the literary ancestor of the whole genre.
A travel writer who hates travel. That's almost too perfect.
It's a real thing, actually. There's a long tradition of travel writers who were miserable on the road. Paul Theroux has written beautifully about this, the loneliness, the discomfort, the sense of being perpetually out of place. His book, The Great Railway Bazaar, is a classic, and he's not a jolly host. He's sharp, sometimes cruel, often unhappy, but the writing is extraordinary.
The genre has literary roots that predate television by decades.
The grumpy traveler is a recurring figure in English literature. Tobias Smollett wrote Travels Through France and Italy in 1766, and he complained about literally everything, the food, the roads, the people, the weather. It's hilarious, and it's essentially an 18th century An Idiot Abroad.
The more things change.
The more British people complain about foreign plumbing.
To pull this together for the prompt, on the authenticity question, the evidence points to Carl being fundamentally genuine. Not acting, not scripted, but aware of his own comic persona and willing to lean into it. The situations were engineered. The reactions were real.
I think that's the most satisfying answer because it preserves the magic. If he were fully acting, the show would be impressive but hollow. If he were completely unaware, he'd be a kind of savant, which is its own problematic framing. The truth, that he's a naturally odd person who understands his own oddness and collaborates with producers to showcase it. That's both more credible and more interesting.
It's the jazz musician model. You know the chord changes, but the solo is improvised.
The producers give him the chord changes. You're going to Jordan, you're sleeping in a cave, you're riding a camel. And Carl improvises the solo. Sometimes it's beautiful, sometimes it's just him complaining about the camel.
On the recommendations front, we've got a solid list. Ramesh Ranganathan for the closest match. Jack Whitehall's dad for the posh variant. David Verrier for the darker edge. Phil Rosenthal for the warm version. And then the literary tradition for people who want to go deeper.
I'd also throw in one more that I didn't mention earlier. There's a YouTube channel called Bald and Bankrupt. It's a British guy traveling through former Soviet countries, often places that are off the beaten path. He's not reluctant, he's actually very enthusiastic, but he has that same unpolished, unscripted quality. No crew, just a guy with a camera. He speaks Russian, which opens up interactions that most travel shows never get. It's a different format entirely, but the appeal is similar. You're seeing real places through an unfiltered lens.
The democratization of the reluctant travel genre.
YouTube has actually been great for this. There are countless channels of people just going places and being honest about it. Most of them aren't funny. The comedy is the hardest part. But the authenticity is there. The barrier to entry for travel media used to be a television network. Now it's a phone and a plane ticket.
Which means the Carl Pilkingtons of the future are probably already out there, just not on television.
Probably complaining about an airport somewhere as we speak.
The circle of life.
I think that's the thing I'd leave listeners with. The reason An Idiot Abroad endures isn't the production values or the locations or even Ricky Gervais's cackling laugh in the background. It's that Carl Pilkington is an unusual human being who happened to get captured on camera. You can't manufacture that. You can only recognize it when it appears and have the good sense to not get in its way.
The hardest thing in television is knowing when to just let the camera roll.
The hardest thing in comedy is trusting that the audience will find the funny without you pointing at it. The genius of An Idiot Abroad is that nobody ever says this is the funny part. Carl just says what he thinks, and the comedy emerges from the gap between his perspective and the grandeur surrounding him. That gap is the whole show.
The gap as genre.
The gap as genre. Someone should write that down.
I think someone just did. Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1840s, a Portuguese naval officer named Francisco Afonso de Chaves was stationed in the Azores and became obsessed with early Islamic maps. He spent years trying to prove that Arab cartographers had mapped the Atlantic islands centuries before the Portuguese. His research was largely ignored, but his personal archive of copied manuscripts later became one of the foundational collections for the study of medieval Islamic geography in Europe.
Cartographic validation through sheer obsession on a volcanic island in the middle of the Atlantic.
There's probably a metaphor in there somewhere.
But I'm not going looking for it.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review. It helps other people find the show.
If you didn't enjoy it, you can always do what Carl would do and complain to someone who can't help you.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.